With regard to the practical application of this, when a problem presents itself or solution, gather together in meditation. First outline the problem in debate, then meditate upon its cosmic aspect, and invoke the cosmic force. Chapter 27. The Law of the Seven Deaths. The first death. As has been previously recorded, when two lines of movement intersect a vortex is set up. These two lines of movement then cease to exist and become a center of stability. This is the first death. The second death. Learn now the implications of death. Action and reaction are equal and opposite upon the plane of their inception. They act, react, and continue to manifest in cyclic form. When transmuted from one plane to another, they cease to manifest upon the first plane and come into being in a different form upon the next plane. If this translation be viewed from the plane of the inception of these forces, it is called death. If it be viewed from the plane of the reception of these forces, it is called birth. If an involutionary change be viewed from the more primitive aspect, it is looked upon as death. If it be viewed from the more evolved aspect, it is looked upon as birth. This is the second death. Let us make this clear by an example. Life, having evolved beyond the capacity of lowly forms to give it expression, builds itself higher forms. The fossilized remains of the abandoned lower forms are found among the debris of life. They have undergone death. Their race is extinct. They are no more. But the life has achieved rebirth into a higher type of vehicle. It is only by the abandonment of the simpler form that life could enter the more complex, though consciousness that is in the plane of the simpler form sees herein a tragedy because it cannot conceive the higher life and it sees its own passing prefigured. But the consciousness which is of the higher life sees the birth of a new manifestation and rejoices, for it sees the fuller expression of its potentialities. The third death. Each individualized consciousness lives to die and dies to live. It is only by death that we can reap the fruits of life. We graze in the fields of earth, and we lie down in the fields of heaven to chew the cud. It has been said, for 1 hour's study do 3 hours meditation. To each span of life there are three spans of death. In death is the soul's meditation and life its study. Did you but live, all experience would pass through consciousness and leave but little impression after the first few pictures had filled all available space. All would be concrete, unrelated, unsynthesized, but in the meditation which is death, the abstract essence of life is extracted, and instead of a million concrete images there is the abstract concept. It is death alone which enables you to utilize experience. Learn to trust death. Learn to love death. Learn to count upon death in your scheme of things, and regularly perform the exercise of visualizing yourself as dead and conceiving how you then shall be, for thus you will learn to build the bridge between life and death so that feet shall tread it with increasing ease. See yourselves as dead and working out your destiny. See yourselves as dead and continuing your work from the plane of the dead. Thus shall a bridge be built that leads beyond the veil. Let the chasm between the so-called living and the so-called dead be bridged by this method, that men may cease to fear death. The fourth death. Four is always the linking number, the fourth body being the highest aspect of the personality links it with the individuality. And the fourth death is called the linking death, the teaching death, or alternatively may be known as sleep. Sleep is a miniature death, just as death is the major sleep, and a knowledge of the nature of sleep assists to explain death. The nature of sleep is insufficiently understood. The impressions of sleep received by the waking consciousness are misleading. In sleep, the physical plane is dissociated from the other planes, and the soul thus freed receives no longer the impressions coming through the five gates of sense, and we say it sleeps and is passive, but the individuality works and is active. In waking life the individuality sleeps, and in sleeping life the individuality wakes. The individuality is referred to in the sacred writings as the angel that ever beholds the face of God. During the waking life of the body, the individuality is intent upon translating into its own terms of abstraction the concrete impressions flowing into the lower soul. When it is no longer thus intent, subjective, because the lower soul is not pouring upon it impressions, it becomes objective upon its own plane and beholds the face of the Father. It then measures itself by the divine standard and makes such adjustments as are within its power, but the adjustments of the spirit are aeonial and are measured by the span of heaven. During sleep the lesser soul may not, however, sink into oblivion, but being much concerned with the unsatisfied desires of the flesh it will continue to function in relation to the thought forms begot of these desires. It dreams the dreams derived from unsatisfied passions and the urge of the instincts. The individuality is not freed and instead of beholding the face of the Father which is in heaven beholds the reversed image of the human form and thereby develops in its own likeness. The individuality, being unable to function on its own plane, makes no growth and remains unevolved, and the personality becomes an exaggerated caricature of itself. From this it can only be freed by the third death, thereby enabling the individuality to assert itself. But if the third death be incomplete, the lower soul will continue to dream upon the astral plane. This leads us to the question of the fifth death. The fifth death is the death of the personality. The personality, being withdrawn from the body, yet continues to live and to function as a personality and the man is in no wise changed and still answers to the name he bore in the flesh. In the lower hells he burns with desire until the possibilities of desire are burnt out. Desire then remains only as an abstract idea and is part of the individuality. He then dies to the lower desires but continues to live in the higher desires. These in their turn he learns to be finite and mortal, he finds them to constitute barriers between himself and his Father whose face he would behold, and he desires to escape from them. He would no longer love with the personal love which loves a person, but the higher manifestation of love which itself is love and loves no person or thing but is a state of consciousness in which all is embraced. He then seeks freedom from the lesser love, and with this desire for escape from that which is good though finite in order to realize the good that is infinite, causes the fifth death, and he is born into consciousness of the individuality and lives upon the plane of the individuality, perceiving the face of his Father which is in heaven but with the waking of desire come again the dreams and with the dreams come the recall into matter, the spirit beholding the face of its Father until consciousness is weary with its brightness, closes its eyes and sleeps. And sleeping, it dreams of its unfulfilled desires and so it is born again, for upon the plane of desire a state of consciousness is a place, and as we desire so are we reborn, thus each man makes his own karma. It may be asked how then is it that men make for themselves suffering and limitations which they could not desire? It is because they do not reap the fruits of fantasy but the fruits of actuality. They are given the results of that which they have permitted themselves to desire, not the thing they desire. To exemplify the man who desired power would obtain vanity, to obtain power he would have to desire the qualities which confer power strength, foresight and wisdom. The man who desires power builds for himself the consciousness of the vain egotist. The man who desires strength, foresight and wisdom, builds for himself the consciousness of power. The sixth death is trance. In trance the body sleeps but the soul is awake. It is active upon its own plane. It functions objectively in the sphere of its upper and lower aspects. It may function upon the sphere of its lower aspects, the instincts, with the body as a background, or it may function upon the sphere of its higher aspects, and concrete mind, with the emotions as a background. This is the plane of normal psychism wherein picture consciousness portrays the events of the inner worlds as in a magic mirror, the conditions of the focus being determined by the emotional states. When psychic consciousness is focused by the instincts and passions with matter as a background, consciousness is transferred to the etheric matter which is withdrawn from the dense vehicle in order that it may not act as the vehicle of passionate desires. Then are seen the manifestations of the lower magic, dangerous and evil in all its forms degrading to the personality because its life is lived in relation to matter and not to spirit. Live all life with God for a background, and measure all your deeds against the span of heaven and assess them in relation to the cosmos, so shall your sin seem grievous in your sight, and your errors very small. The seventh death is initiation. In the seventh death, consciousness is withdrawn from the personality and made one with the individuality, and then a man ever beholds the face of his Father which is in heaven even when he himself sojourns upon earth. Thus it is that the initiate is not as other men. Initiation is a living death. Those who desire the things of the senses and the pride of life use the words living death to explain the most terrible fate that can befall a man. But those who have knowledge know that the living death means the freedom of the spirit brought through to the planes of matter. It means the consciousness of the abiding presence in the midst of the consciousness of the senses. It means awareness of heaven while dwelling upon earth. Therefore the initiate goes to the living death, which is freedom while still in the body, for death annuls the law of limitation, frees the potentialities of the spirit, gives sight to the blind, and power to the impotent. That for which we longed vainly in life we realize in death, for death is life and life is death. To the wider consciousness the womb is a grave and the grave is a womb. The soul entering upon life, bids farewell to his friends who mourn for him, and taking his courage in both hands, facing the great ordeal and submitting to suffering, enters upon life. His first action in life is to draw breath. His second action with that breath is to set up a cry of distress, because he entered upon the task of life with grief, and his aim in life is to make life bearable. But when he enters the grave he passes through the gateway into the wider life of consciousness, and when the initiate would pass to the wider life of consciousness he passes through a gateway which symbolizes death, and by his death to the things of desire he obtains freedom, and as one dead he walks among men. In the death in life, which is the freedom of the spirit in the bonds of the flesh, he transcends the law of limitation. Being dead he is free, being dead he moves with power among those buried in the flesh, and they, seeing the light shining brightly through him, know that he is dead, for the light cannot shine through that consciousness. But when consciousness is discarnate, the light shines through, and if the discarnate consciousness is still manipulating its body, then that life shines through into the world of matter and illuminates man. But remember this and meditate upon it: an initiate is a dead man who manipulates his body that he may thereby serve those who cannot otherwise be approached. Summary of chapter. Deaths. 1. Neutralization of two movements. 2. The transmutation of force from one plane to the plane below. 3. Death of the individualized consciousness and abstraction of the absolute essence of life in meditation. 4. Sleep, the linking or teaching death, objective on its own plane. 5. Death of the personality and of all its desires. 6. Trance. The body sleeps but the soul is awake. 7. Initiation. Consciousness withdrawn from the personality and made one with the individuality. Chapter 28. The Law of Impactation, or the Transmission of Action from One Plane to Another. The true method of impactation is but little known because it involves the inner principles of polarity. Impactation may be defined as the act of bringing a force of a subtler plane through to a denser plane upon the involutionary arc. This must be distinguished from degradation. Degradation is a similar act upon the evolutionary arc. We speak of the degradation or the sublimation of a force upon the evolutionary arc, and of impactation and disintegration upon the involutionary arc. An important concept concerning the dynamic standard of good and evil is contained in this distinction. Impactation then is the act of advancing a force in evolution by developing it upon the form aspect. You must remember that the stream of evolving life issuing from the Logos has to descend into matter in order to be organized, and having developed form by its confinement in matter it uses that form as a mold, or more strictly speaking, a framework, for the subtler surrounds the dense, and when the framework of the dense is withdrawn, the subtle maintains the form it assumed because the system of stress is then developed becomes a habit. The act of sublimation is to separate the dense from the gross and the gross from the subtle. But the act of impactation is to lock two tangential forces of the subtle into a node of the dense. This, you will perceive, was the method of the creation of the atom. Let us make this clear by example. It is desired, let us suppose, to realize an abstract concept in concrete form. to do this, it must be realized that there are two sides to every question and that each side has elements of good and bad, construction and destruction. Construction of the higher means destruction of the lower. All things die to the birth. The involutionary and evolutionary aspect of every problem has to be envisaged. Perceiving then these two aspects, you will see that there are certain considerations which, if regarded alone, would lead you to proceed in the opposite direction to that which you contemplate. That is to say, you would abandon your original intention and turn back towards the center. Other considerations, however, induce you to press out towards the circumference. You will therefore always find, in every consideration, you are torn two ways. A unanimous decision is impossible, and it is a unanimous decision which is necessary in order to bring to birth upon a denser plane that which is conceived upon a subtler plane. It is, therefore, necessary that in such a matter you should have cooperation from an entity of a different type to your own, so that the consideration will be reversed, so that that aspect of yourself which would return to the center finds itself complemented by a similar aspect in the cooperator which would press outwards towards the circumference, not two halves but four quarters. Then comes the figure of the exchange of partners, and you have two wholes instead of four halves, one wholly positive and one wholly negative. One turns back towards the center. One sets out towards the circumference. They come into alignment and the force can pass through them. The force intensifies all qualities. That which sets towards the center draws towards the center. That which sets towards the circumference draws towards the circumference. Then comes repolarization. Each of the two halves temporarily joins, draws apart, and affects repolarization within itself into a positive and negative aspect, consciousness and subconsciousness, personality and individuality, and reforms itself. You then have four holes on two planes. This is a subject which requires meditation. It cannot be comprehended without a key. Have you realized the import of that which has been given? We have given you the lock, but the key cannot be given you so freely. The key must not be written down. The drawing apart of that which inclines towards the center from that which inclines towards the circumference explains many things. Firstly, the gulf between personality and individuality and heredity. That which is projected into the denser, being formed from the framework of the subtler, retains the stress habit of its original. Equally, when the process is not that of the normal advance of life, but a special operation undertaken at the bidding of the will, not the desires, that which is impacted is a reflection of the combined nature of the impactors. The impactors, therefore, although they separate according to the law of reaction and the law of magnetism, that like repels like, are permanently linked by means of the common bond to that which they have created. The symbol is that of the inverted A, in which the two converging bars represent the creators. The crossbar, the line of demarcation between the planes, and the lower incomplete triangle, the created. The crossbar is known as the bar of impactation, and you will see its vital significance in all practical operations based upon this principle. The bar of impactation must be included in the projected aspect in order to complete it and make of it a triangle, the simplest form of closed figure. The impactors can then detach themselves at the line of demarcation and be free to function as independent units upon their own plane, but the system of magnetic stresses remains behind, attached to the bar of impactation which forms the upper line of the triangle, and when the triangle seeks to cross the bar and develop into the mighty alpha, it follows the lines already laid down. Now these lines, being projections into subtle matter of the basic angle of the triangle, enable consciousness of the type of the impactors to contact it. Hereby you see the way in which the master approaches the pupil. There are two kinds of birth. Firstly, that which is in the ordinary course of nature, and the incarnation of a consciousness of a loftier grade than that which requires manifestation in matter for its development. In the latter case, the soul impacts itself with the assistance of another of a similar grade. The one which desires to manifest presses towards the circumference, and its partner in impactation returns towards the center, but these two maintain contact by the prolongation of the angles. And when consciousness is raised, you get the symbol of the six-pointed star, which is the symbol of initiation. This explains the phenomenon of four quarters instead of two halves. It explains the phenomenon of the Christ and the Jesus, and of all greater and lesser selves. There are, no doubt, many points in the foregoing remarks on which you will meditate before you will perceive their significance. The act of impactation is based upon the use of the laws of the attraction of the center and the attraction of the circumference, and the use of polarity, and in all elaborations of the concepts of polarity, the law of impactation comes into function because polarity gives rise to impactation, and impactation depends on polarity, wherein union takes place horizontally and fissure takes place vertically. Chapter 29. The law of the aspects of force or polarity. Just as it was impossible to consider the law of impactation without considering the law of polarity, so it is impossible to consider the law of polarity without considering the law of attraction of the center and the attraction of the circumference, because polarity has its basis in these two laws. It is according to whether the attraction be towards the center or the circumference that the negative or positive aspects of force are observed. The attraction towards the center gives the negative, and the attraction towards the circumference the positive aspect, and it is those two in polarity that produce the circulation of force. You see the prototype of which this is the correspondence, in the positive and negative aspects of the cosmic rays. The glyph of this is contained in the caduceus of Mercury. There you see the black and white serpents of positive and negative functions twined from side to side of the staff. Taken in its mundane aspect, the staff represents the ray and the black and white serpents the positive and negative aspects of the life wave. A glyph needs generally for its understanding the superimposition of another glyph belonging to the next plane, thus representing a practical application of the law of impactation. Place upon the glyph of Mercury, otherwise Hermes, lord of the mind, the glyph of Orpheus, lord of the elementals. Place the musical scale upon the staff of wisdom and you will see the places marked off on the staff. Then place the inverted A with its basal angle upon whatever plane you wish to consider and you will see the implication of the prolongation of the angle. You will then perceive that which appears as a unity upon one plane is prolonged into a duality upon the subtler planes. Take the two points of your duality. Reduce them a plane according to the law of correspondences, taking these two lower points as the basal angles of the upper A and you can circumscribe your hexagon. You will then see that the highest angle of your hexagon is in exact correspondence with the lowest angle, and that the two side rays upon each side may be connected by lines representing their respective affinities. This gives you the clue to the horizontal and vertical polarity, which is the cross of regeneration. Polarity according to the horizontal account is horizontal two of a kind, opposite in type. Polarity according to the esoteric concept is vertical and has its clue in correspondence. Place the cross on the hexagon, and the hexagon on the caduceus and you will see the significance. Let the basal point of the six-pointed star rest upon the densest plane under consideration. Let each pair of lateral points rest upon a plane. And let the transverse bar of the cross be the bar of impactation, you will then see the manner in which any given set of forces will work. This is a method of divination. Now in considering the caduceus, which is the symbol of polarity upon the planes, note that the serpent as it passes from side to side of the staff goes from the positive to the negative side of the ray. This will teach you that a force which is positive upon one plane will be negative upon the plane above. Whether you are considering the emanations of the zodiac or the levels of consciousness, this is equally true. Polarity is always inverted, plane by plane. This will give you a further clue to the significance of the four quarters. If you raise consciousness, you change polarity. Whenever union takes place between two aspects upon a plane, they develop a similar magnetism and becoming repellent thereby they are forced apart. If therefore contact is made upon but a single plane, repulsion and estrangement follows, but if contact takes place upon more than one plane, alternation of magnetism is set up and a circuit of the type of a figure 8 is built. Four quarters again. This holds good whether of men or of movements. polarity upon the planes always exists as four quarters. This is the clue to much. You will have perceived in the foregoing teachings, certain applications of the abstract to the concrete which it is not expedient should be concreted even in the abstract. Taking these as your basis, proceed further. When one desires to project a manifestation from a subtler plane to a denser plane on the involutionary arc, it summonses to its assistance another, and the two detach and project each a part of their substance. Viewed from the denser plane, the projection appears as one, viewed from the subtler plane, the projection appears as it really is a projection. Whenever the one is considered, it is necessary for its understanding to project it into the subtler planes until it reveals the two, four of the dual nature it would partake, and it is this duality of nature which is the clue to so much in both men and things. Therefore remember that when dealing with any form, one can always be resolved into two, and for a production of a new object two are always essential, and it is upon this subtle action and reaction and balance of force that ultimate issues depend. Thought will enable you to perceive that you have herein an explanation of the basis of physical generation, you have also the explanation of the creation of familiars or artificial elementals which, though abused, have their uses. It is possible, however, to create and project a thought form without the interposition of a second entity by polarizing the personality and individuality. Normally, if you read correctly the glyph of Hermes, you will perceive that the polarity of the seven bodies is alternating and opposite. If you effect the repolarization so that the whole personality should be negative, and the whole individuality positive, you effect the condition in which creation of minor forms is possible within the entity. These, however, cannot sustain any independent life, but have to be fed and maintained by their parent. This polarization is effected by neutralizing the characteristic activity of each body of the personality, and intensifying the activities of each body of the individuality so that all inhibitions are removed, and this produces a state of instability, and therefore cannot be sustained for long. You will perceive that here you have certain important clues to the practice of that which induces that which is not in that which thinks it is, but is not. The opposite process in which you have the inhibition of the individuality and the intensification of the personality produces a certain type of mundane genius which burns brightly to its own destruction. You will perceive then that there is the cooperation of the two for the production of the third, and the repolarization of the two aspects of the entity for the projection of an expression. There is also another aspect upon group form. The consciousness of a group is an entity of a negative or female type. It requires to be stimulated by a positive force before it can become creative. That which functions on a subtler plane is positive in relation to that which functions on a denser plane. Should a consciousness conceive the aims of a group on a higher plane than that on which the group conceives them, it becomes positive towards that group and thereby can fertilize it. When fertilization of a group occurs, each of the individuals of that group becomes pregnant with a new life and brings creative work to birth upon the physical plane. They will then have conceived that which the group leader has begotten and will then be upon the same plane as the leader. Having conceived the same ideal, they will then be of the same polarity as the leader, and it will no longer be possible for him to bring a creative stimulus to that group. This will explain to you the process of fluorescence and degeneration which groups undergo, but periods of quiescence are not of necessity death. You will observe that throughout all manifested life the cooperation of two factors is essential for all form building. Force, however, works as a unit because its polarity is in the logos. Chapter 30. The Law of the Attraction of Outer Space. In considering the law of the attraction of outer space, we have first to inquire how it is that the attraction of outer space is able to overcome the attraction of the center. In order to understand this problem, we have to consider certain basic aspects of the universe which have been previously described. The logoidal consciousness, having attained equilibrium, has achieved perfection, and having attained that which it had conceptually realized, propounds a further conception and seeks its realization. These formal concepts already conceived within the logoidal consciousness are continued into more complex syntheses, thereby partaking of the nature of succeedingly developed phases of manifestation, or to express the same idea in another terminology, are passed outward down the planes of manifestation. The growing points of the logos are projected into manifestation as evolutionary impulses.